Session number 19588, Reel 3.
Morris Leslie, Reel 3.
We got involved with taking the outer fortresses with the 49th, I think it was the 49th Division. Eventually, we'd done most of that, and then they decided there and then that Le Havre, the inner Le Havre, was so badly hit with bombers and so badly mauled around that only one part of A Squadron was allowed in there, and so we remained on the outskirts. By that time, we'd bailed out again from a tank. We got caught in a tank trap, and Jerry was shooting at us from the nearby, so we had to evacuate the tank. We couldn't move anywhere. And we went into one of his bunkers, where we met a lot of our 15th Scottish who were sheltering in the infantry. They were in there. And then when nightfall come, we went back out, and the other tank come back out, and they pulled us out. And there we remained until the final capitulation of Le Havre. But it was so badly mauled around that only A Squadron was allowed in there in the end. But we spent most of our time taking the hillocks all round there with the infantry.
What was the method of attacking these outer fortresses?
Well, it was mainly with regimental infantry with tank support. That was the main thing they used to do. Or they used to bypass them and come in from the flank. A lot of the Jerrys gave up because by the time they'd had enough bombardment and, of course, you had typhoons coming in and shooting them up and all the rest of it.
Which was the worst for you, the fighting in Normandy or the fighting at Le Havre?
Oh, the fighting in Normandy was by far, because we never got no sleep at all. And it was so confused.
Which tank were you in by now?
I was in Morelli's tank, which was the 2nd IC's. Our troop leader was a sergeant, a sergeant job. He was made troop leader after that. So we never had another officer until we got late into Holland.
So after Le Havre?
After Le Havre, the only other thing we'd done was we'd done some Valerie for the 51st. We made a dash for them. Because apparently during the 1939 they were in St. Valery and they left all their instruments back there, their band instruments and all that. So we made a dash for that, and we stayed outside while the Highland Division went in and recaptured all their equipment, which they left in 1939.
So they wanted musical instruments?
Well, that's what they got back, and all their flags and all this rig. They left them behind in safekeeping somewhere there. And then from there, we never done well, because there was very little fighting once we reached the Seine. There was very little fighting in Belgium. Very little fighting at all in Belgium. The Germans by that time had congregated all up into Holland, which is where we had our next encounters in Holland.
What happened then?
Well, we went to Eindhoven. We'd done a lot of action around Eindhoven. We cleared the Germans from Eindhoven in various attacks with the infantry support. We then helped the 81st Airborne Division, which is the American Airborne Division, which had dropped on the nearby river. We took them into action once and done that. From there, we were then rushed. We were due to go into action to clear the rest of the Holland up to the River Maas with the 51st. We then got an urgent appeal to help out at a place called Sedogenbosch, which is a key town in Holland. We then had a 50, 60 mile dash across there.
What happened at Sertogenbosch?
Well, they were preparing for an attack on Sertogenbosch by the 53rd Welsh Division. It was the centre of all the operations. In other words, there was roads leading out, railways, canals, and they were determined, we were determined to take it, and the Germans were determined to hold it. So we then got an urgent call in there to relieve the 47th Dragoon Guard, who said they'd had enough action there and they didn't like it. So they asked us to go in, so we went in to help the 53rd clear it out.
What action did you see at Sertogenbosch?
We saw an action with the Welsh Division. We bailed out of a tank again because we got trapped, and the Germans were shooting the side of the building where we were trapped. We then bailed out of that. We joined the infantry. We joined the infantry in the dugouts. We then, at nightfall, got our tank, and then we went back over the canal to help the rest of our troop out, who were across the other side with the 53rd. And we saw action over there with the infantry. We also had some dust-ups with some of their tanks over there. We knocked out a few tanks, and then eventually we captured the town with the help. Well, it was the 53rd that done most of the donkey work. We just helped them out. And we lost some casualties there.
How did the fighting at Sertogenbosch compare with Le Havre?
Well, it was street fighting, so it was slightly different to what we were used to. And it was different. It was bitter, because the information we got when we arrived there, there was no enemy tanks in there, because what he'd done is the Germans had sneaked in by train about 15, 20 tanks, self-propelled tanks, which we weren't told about, and that's where the problem lie. So, because before we actually went into action to support the infantry, we got rid of most of our armoured piercing. So we never had much armoured piercing in the turret. It was different, and in that way. And of course, around every street corner, you had to be very careful in case you had a... It was different. You weren't out in open country. And after we finished that, we went on another attack over... That's where we got our lot. We got blown up on a tank in a big... We're just going into action again, just going up on a bund to support the infantry again, just outside, and we got blown up.
Where was this?
Just outside Sertogenbosch.
On a mine?
Yes, it was a big mine, they reckon. It was a big landmine. We just got blown up, the tank. Two of us got blown upside down in the turret, and we got caught. We got fire problems, and the rest of the tank got out.
You mean you got burned?
I got burned, yeah. And the operator got burned. And so we got, the tank was a complete write-off. Three members got out, and managed to get out last of all. We were blown upside down, and we managed to free ourselves, and the operator and myself got out. But at that time, we got badly burnt around the face and hands.
So it was... Only your face and hands have got burnt.
That's right, yeah. So we got flown back to Brussels.
How long were you in the tank for before you could get out of it?
Well, we didn't know what happened because there was such a loud explosion. And we finished up upside down, two of us. Upside down. We got jammed. We were upside down in the thing, and we got jammed. Eventually, we got out. And the rest of our crew were about 100 yards behind. They were okay, but the tank was on fire by that time. And the ammunition was then exploding, so we got out in time. We were then went back to the first aid station, and we then got flown by a de Havilland biplane right back to Brussels. where I ended up in hospital.
How terrifying was it in the tank?
Well, it was, because I mean, all you could see was a flame, and you were upside down, and there's no way you could wriggle. We were in a tank suit, and that was caught as well.
You mean your suit was on fire?
Yeah, the back of the suit was on fire as well, because as soon as I got out, somebody said, your tank's on, your suit's on fire. So I discarded that. And then I found out all the arms, all the hands and the face had been burnt. And I got back to the training station, and they put all masks on our face, and we got phoned back, and we got injected with morphine. And then we had this uncomfortable ride back in a plane. It was terrible, because we kept it in these air pockets, you know, and when you're under sedation, it's terrible. You think you've lost half your... And like, we got back to...
half your stomach.
Yeah, this is what... I've never been in a plane since. Oh, last year was the first time.
What was the weather like at this time?
The weather was cold, and there was a certain amount of snow around. And then I eventually went back by train to Amiens, and I spent 2 months back in Amiens. The regiment by this time had cleared most of the what they had to do, and then they went to a winter quarters up in North Holland, the Fécamp, I think it was, Fécamp.
What medical treatment did you get for your burns?
Well, they just done, basically, they just put this mask on the face. And a cream, and I had a mask on for about 3 or 4 weeks.
You didn't have any grafts or anything?
No grafts on that, no. They said I was very lucky, in actual fact.
Did you make a full recovery?
Yes, yeah. And then I went back to rejoin the regiment.
Do you know when about you joined them?
Yes, I joined them in the Ardennes.
In December?
Yes, because they were, while they were stationed up in North Holland, Germans had the breakthrough in the Ardennes, and they came down from there with the 51st Highland Division again, and I joined them in the Ardennes in the cold weather.
Did you go back to the same job and unit?
Not. I went back to the same unit, but by that time the fighting virtually finished. They were bringing a tank back to be loaded on it in the Ardennes to be taken back to Brussels. So they had a driver, so I crew commanded that all the way back. Well, until we came off, you know, these high bun roads they got there, it slid off there, and we bailed out of that again. So. It slid right over there, so eventually we did get it back. And went back to Brussels and picked up our own tanks again. And I virtually had the same job again. And then we went up into Holland again. And we were then ordered to go back to our own amphibious, which was, because we had amphibious training in England, right? We went back to these... Buffaloes, what they call Buffalo, which is the amphibious. We then trained on the Mars, just in the lower part of Holland. We spent 3-4 weeks there. We then moved up to north, just on the German border again, and preparing for the Rhine crossing. And we were the first or second wave across in the Buffaloes. I was driving then, by then time. Driving the Buffalo, and then we then took our first lot across at it must have been about 2 o'clock in the morning. We took them the first wave across.
Were you under fire?
Yes. And the unfortunate part about while under fire, our just next door to us while going into the was a whole battery of rockets firing guns of ours, and I thought and. My last moment had come when they opened up. God, it was terrible. We hit the other side, okay. We managed to get our infantry off, plus a load of TNT, which we were going to blow over the banks. And the next day, all we were doing was ferrying troops backwards and forwards. And Jerry, by that time, was shelling us as we were moving backwards and forwards. And then the next day, we took over the remains of the airborne, who had been dropped on the wrong river. They dropped them on the Mars River instead of the Rhine. So we took ferried them across next day.
So the Buffaloes that you drove were really being used like landing craft.
Well, they were landing craft. In other words, they took 30-odd men, or they took jeeps or anything. They were, I think they must have been, there's a picture in there of a Buffalo. And all we had on there was a crew commander, an operator, and a driver, and I became the driver.
How did you like driving as opposed to being a gunner?
Well, it was okay.
Which did you prefer?
Well, with a gun, you can fire back. Well, because I've been doing gunning so long, you know, it became a second nature, really. I mean, gunning. I mean, any object which you used to fire, you used your own discretion. The crew commander used to take you onto the target, give you a rough estimate or whatever, and if you didn't think it was right, you had your own intuition. You used to do it how you thought fit.
You were allowed your own initiative.
Well, you had to, because you've been doing it so long. And then after we finished the Rhine crossing, we reverted back to tanks again. We were the only squadron that allowed our regiment. We took our tanks.
These are the Shermans again.
That's right. So we then entered Germany. We got into Germany one part, and then we were recalled back to Holland again.
So you didn't get far into Germany?
No, we didn't get far into Germany, because we were recalled back to Germany, but was apparently on the Mars, the Germans were still coming over the river, and the only people guarding the river Mars was a makeshift thingy of Belgium and Dutch troops and an artillery regiment. So we came back. We stationed near the Mars, and all we done was we had one squadron in reserve all the time, while one squadron went out and done infantry on the river Bun. So we were in trenches. We finished our war in trenches.
You mean German troops were attacking the Dutch?
Yeah,
and Belgians?
They used to come across the river
on
attacking.
Yeah.
And the only troops they had guarding it was sort of irregulars from the Belgian and Dutch army. So we came back and took over doing infantry work, the regiment did. And so we spent 5 days up in the trenches and 5 days back with tanks. And that's where we finished our war, doing trench work on the River Mars.
What did that involve, the trench work?
Well, it involved stopping Jerry from crossing, firing machine guns, doing infantry, 1 hour on, 2 hour off duties at night. So we were on guard most of the time.
So it was purely infantry work?
Purely infantry work, that's right. And then after 5 days we came back, and we were the standby tank regiment, while another squadron went up and done the same work on the same river stretch.
How did you like being an infantryman?
Well, it was all right. They weren't firing at us all that much. But Jerry, we could see Jerry across the way. He was just across the way there.
So there wasn't much action?
Not a lot of action, because he realised that there was a regular unit then. Well, we'd been doing infantry work, so we'd done it before. So.
But what was the weather like?
It wasn't bad. No, it was quite good in them days. We had a lot of rain, obviously. But we were billeted in a Dutch school there.
Any contact with Dutch civilians?
Oh yeah, a lot, because we were billeted in the Dutch school.
How did you get on with them?
They're very kind. We admired the Dutch, and we like them a lot. And this October I go back to the reunion in Holland again.
Did you ever come in across any Dutch who had been pro-German?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
Under what circumstances did you come across them?
Well, they were prisoners. I mean, when we they were prisoners of the Dutch resistance, because the Dutch, at Sertogenbosch, there's a big concentration camp there. At Sertogenbosch. And a lot of the Dutch that were sort of been with the Germans were put in here and guarded into this concentration camp. It was the biggest one on the continent, this concentration camp. We went back there 2 years ago to have a look at it again, because this year we go back for the 55th anniversary of the liberation of Sertogenbosch. And there we go into homes, we have march pass with the 53rd Welsh Division, and they make us really welcome. And this is about the third time I've been back.
So were you in Netherlands when VE Day occurred?
When VE Day, yes, I was, yeah.
What happened on VE Day?
Well, the Dutch, we all celebrate, because we celebrate a lot with the Dutch in the village.
What form do the celebrations take?
Parties and that, various parties and that. But there wasn't a lot we could do, actually, because it was only a small village.
What village was this?
I'm not quite certain of it, but I got photographs upstairs of the village school. I got a lot of army photographs upstairs taken there.
What condition were the Dutch civilians in?
They weren't bad in certain areas. A lot of areas, especially in Sertogenbosch, they hadn't got much food at all. In fact, a lot of them were eating dead horses. They were cutting up dead horses in the street when we went through.
What happened after VE Day to you?
We stayed there for some time. Then from there we went up north to a place called Rendsburg, north of Kiel. And there we were billeted on this along the seafront, and we were in charge of took over from the guards of a quarter of a million German troops, a prisoner of war camp.
What was that camp like?
Well, what actually happened is that the guard camp was governed by their own SS, and on their outer perimeter was their tank unit, which they considered their senior unit, and we used to guard that. So their internal was their own responsibility. So we just to go in and see that everything was all right. We never used to approach them, but we used to guard the outside perimeter. And if anybody got out, it was their responsibility to catch up and to get them back. If not, they were for the high jump.
And how long were you doing this for?
Oh, we'd done that throughout that bad winter where the Baltic all froze up. We were billeted in houses right along the Baltic Sea.
You mean the winter of 45-46?
Well, a severe winter. Was it 46?
47 was a severe winter.
Yeah, that was when we were still up there. 46. I got 46, 47, somewhere up that time, yeah.
So you were there quite a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were there. It was a bad winter, I remember, because the Baltic froze that year. And we had a great chopping wood to keep our billets warm. And there, a lot of the regiment had left by then, and the regiment got broken up from then.
Did you have any trouble at this POW camp at Rendsburg?
No, not much at all, no. Because they were to guard themselves, and that was the end of it. If there was any trouble, they were for the high jumpers, we used to call. We used to take a lot of the prisoner of war camp. I used to be charged for a prisoner of war camp, some prisoners. We used to do a lot of work around the town we were in, which is Rendsburg. Some of them were SS. And I used to have to, I took over them. I used to march them around various doing odd jobs around the camps and that, the camp.
So you must have been there well over a year by the sound of it.
We were bad off a year now. And then the regiment got broken up and I got transferred to the sharpshooters, County of London Yeomanry, which was stationed in a place called Lunenburg.
For more occupation duties?
Yes, yeah.
What were occupation duties like at Lunenburg?
Well, there wasn't much really to be done because by that time everything had settled down and we got our new tanks. We got the new Comet tanks. And we used to go out in Lunenburg Heath doing a lot of firing. We were still in training. We're still doing training in Lunenburg Heath. So the Army of Occupation wasn't really. And then they disbanded them and I went to the 3rd RTR station up in Flensburg on the Danish border.
Which of these three places did you like best?
I should think the Flensburg, because it was right next door to Denmark. We'd go do trips to Denmark. And then there I got demobbed.
Why were you so long in being demobbed?
Well, I didn't go in. I was 5 years in, wasn't I? Well, we weren't, what was I, about 45, 46. Most of the people that got demobbed were in what do they call them?
Category.
Yeah, they got priorities, in other words, they were in, they got priorities, and then they used to go in rotation, so, you know, I was about 45, I think.
What was the attraction of going into Denmark?
Well, Danes were very, very, very friendly. We'd already been into Denmark. Our regiment was, when we were stationed up in Kiel, we were given the job of guarding the King of Denmark when he was in his palace. So we got all spruced up when we were in Germany, and we got transported over to Denmark to do guard duties there. At the Royal Palace. And of course we knew a few of the Danish while we were over there. We played football against them. So we knew.
What was the attitude of German civilians towards you?
Well, I think the war was over. Some were very friendly towards us. Others, we weren't allowed to fraternise, in other words. So.
How do you feel now about having served in the armour in the Second World War?
Well, it was a job. It was a job I had to do, and that was it.
Did you have any after effects?
No, I suppose you do have some after effects. The first tank and such like as that, they reoccur, but basically you try and put it out of your mind.
You mean the first hit on the tank?
The first, when we lost the first crew. There's certain parts of the thing you obviously remember, which are more predominant than others, but apart from that, no. And of course, as I said, my father being a regular, I'd been around the army all over the place with him.